Unstoppable Sound Agency.
Welcome to this edition of Move to Amend Reports, where we connect you with activists and organizers working on the front lines of the democracy movement to bring you the lowdown on corporate rule, corporate personhood, and money as speech. This is the space to find info you need to help pass the We the People Amendment and legalize democracy. I'm Egberto Willis, and...
I'm Laura Bonham. How you doing, Egberto?
Oh, Laura, all is fine here in Texas. The heat is starting to subside a bit, but it is still hot.
Well, it is autumn in the Wasatch Mountains. Park City is under an umbrella of red right now. The oak and everything is turning. Soon it'll be all yellow with aspen leaves. There's starting to get some trees changing around my neck of the woods. I'm a couple thousand feet lower than Park City at a mile high. And so we're seeing some changing the leaves here. It's definitely cooling off. It got down to 32 degrees one night last week. My garden, I'm having to cover it at night now to get my final days of production out of it. So summer is over in the Wasatch Mountains of Utah, at any rate.
Well, Gloria, you're putting your growing hands where your mouth. I mean, you're just showing us what we all should be doing to really have a sustainable economy and a sustainable environment. You grow a whole lot of stuff, and I have to commend you. Next time I see you back in Sacramento, I'll be waiting on some of my, what kind of chips were those again?
What did I make you? Kale chips, I think?
Kale chips, that's what it was. Yes, yes.
I didn't grow kale this year, though. But anyway, things change up. I'll bring you some hot peppers.
Okay, I can deal with that. I can deal with that.
You know, it's been a couple weeks since we've been together, and some stuff has happened, and I'm kind of interested in knowing what your take is on, say, what's going on with the Standing Rock Sioux and their fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Let me tell you, I couldn't feel any better than I do right now, because what we saw, Laura, is we saw people get together and forced an action. Think about this. If these people didn't get into North Dakota and put their bodies on the line, do you think that pipeline would have stopped? I mean, we don't know if it's permanent, but it actually shows that we can have an effect on what's going on in our country.
Oh, it's wonderful to see. I was looking at some of the images and of the encampments, and one of them was along the river, and it was so beautiful. It was teepees,
right?
And a lot of so there were teepees and Native American tribes. There's over 200 of them are being represented there now. So I don't know which tribe or if this was just an amalgamation, but it was just such a sight to see, looking over the river with the teepees and all. It really harkened back to images of the old West. So that was really that image really, really struck me. But what's really striking me is how this whole thing is being led by the First Nations. And it actually started with women in the First Nations. So it's very much a community-led effort with, like I said before, a lot of tribes, but also a lot of white allies are jumping on board. So we're watching movement building playing out. And like you said, whether they win this fight or not, there's some really important levers being pulled, some really important organizing happening that are bringing together a very diverse group of people to stand for the environment. And I think it's great that it's led by Indigenous people, because I am of a mind that we should have listened to them way back in the beginning.
No kidding. But you know, Laura, it's even there's a sort of a macabre part of it that got to me. And you know what? It stood out when Amy Goodman was out there, and the dogs and the men starting to manhandle the protesters. It wasn't public security. It wasn't the police. It was private security that decided to attack the protesters. And I found that.
Yeah, like the.
Go ahead.
Like the Pinkertons. Pinkertons 2.0.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, you took it out of my mouth. That's what I was thinking of. You know, it's amazing how we're reverting to the past when it was these oligarchs who had their thugs come out there and attack the worker, in this case, attack the people who have a rightful first choice to that land. So, I mean, we saw great things in that it stopped the pipeline temporarily. But it also brought out something that we should highlight. I mean, I think we need to highlight that as well, because I think many people look at it as, okay, so there was a protest, there was a little bit of violence, but this sort of violence was done by a private corporation attacking the citizens of the United States, the citizens of the tribal nations. And I think that is something that we really, really should take a look at as well.
Well, you're so right, because it's state violence. This has been a peaceful protest right down the line, all the way. They've used nonviolent tactics, and it was the state that unleashed the violence. And I mean, it's nasty. Like, they unleashed those dogs on children.
Right.
Children got bit. To unleash them on children is just horrible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But you know what? All in all, this is what we are going to have to do going forward, because there's a whole lot of these events that are about to occur, not only for the pipeline, but as you know very well, for TPP, for other trade agreements, TTIP and all these other agreements that are either recently been effected or about to be in effect. So we have a lot of work ahead of us, not to speak about the social justice and racial justice work that is really coming up upon us right now. So there's a whole lot for the world of activism to be tackling right now.
Oh yeah, in every corner of the world. And you know, while standing in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux, we can't forget about the Apache in Arizona and the other tribes that are fighting that land grab passed in the 2015 Defense Authorization Act, which traded their sacred sites away, even after the bill, when it was a standalone bill, couldn't mm-hmm. pass. So that struggle continues. And then there's also the Winnemem Wintu tribe in California, who lost 85% of their cultural sites when the Shasta Dam was first built. And they're currently entertaining a proposal to raise the dam in response to California's drought, and that would submerge almost all that remains of the cultural lands of the Winnemem Wintu tribe. You know, and the list goes on and on and on in terms of our government's state, local, and federal relationship with the First Nations. So I hope that all of this solidarity that's growing up around the Standing Rock Sioux just breaks down the barrier and builds solidarity for these other struggles that are going on as well.
That's why we need programs like this, Laura. And I tell you what, these programs are learning experiences, not only for our followers, but also a learning experience for ourselves. For me, I mean, I learn a lot talking to the people that we talk to. I just learned something from you. Another Native group that is having problems in California and the raising of the Shasta Dam. So, I mean, that is what makes these programs so important, because we can't all know everything, but if we try to keep ourselves informed when we have the opportunity to do so, it makes a difference. So folks who are listening to this show, do remember to not only listen to it on your podcast, but please make sure that you share it as well, because there's nothing like keeping us informed. When we're informed, we make less bad decisions. If we were informed, we wouldn't have had the type of candidates we have running for presidency right now. So let's be informed.
Boy, that last point was well said. So on another thing that's happening, which isn't exactly newsy, but it kind of is, I've been really looking forward to the release of Oliver Stone's new film, Snowden. So are you going to the premiere?
I am not going to the premiere, you know, but I am definitely going to take it in the first chance I get. Are you going?
Well, I don't I'm thinking I will because, you know, my birthday is this week. So I'm thinking well, I might actually touch down.
Happy birthday, in case I don't hear from you. Happy birthday to Laura.
But, you know, I've been reading a lot about the film. And, of course, I've been following Snowden since it all first cracked. But, you know, I think it's important for people who are going into this film to understand it's a biopic. It's not a biographical documentary.
Right.
It fudges details in order to tell the story in 2 hours and to make it more enjoyable. Mm-hmm. But it's accurate. From my understanding, it's accurate in the way in which it portrays the truth, that being that the United States developed and deployed a system of mass surveillance without democratic consent, and that Edward Snowden, the person who stepped forward to reveal that system, did so with sincerity, courage, conviction, and patriotism. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it because I've admired Snowden from the get-go, and I don't believe he should be tried for espionage, and I think he should be able to come home or at least go to a country of his choosing.
Right. Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I haven't followed the Snowden case as in detail as you are, so I leave that up to you. You're going to have to inform me on that one.
Well, it's kind of interesting when you listen to him, and I encourage folks to, you know, try and get some of this background on Snowden before you go in to see the movie. I haven't seen it, but I think it's helpful kind of being able to parse truth from fiction and to understand that through it all, Snowden had claimed at the very beginning he did it because he was a patriot. And I've, you know, read a lot and watch a lot of news, and I really work to inform myself. But when you know, I really believe Snowden to be very sincere. You know, he's a man that I would gladly vote for and elect. I look at him as a person who's just chock-a-block full of integrity. And he realized that in the wake of Chelsea Manning and WikiLeaks and all that stuff that had gone before him, that he needed to make information public so that the public could determine. Well, his problem has been that this was done without democratic consent. Not that it was done, that it was done without our consent, and that there should be a public debate about it, and then the policy should be set. That's where he's coming from. And I couldn't agree more with that, considering the cost to our civil rights and to our pocketbooks. So, and in addition to the movie being released, I understand that the ACLU, which has done a lot of work on Manning's case, and I'm assuming they've done work around Snowden. I'm assuming, I don't know that to be true. Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International have launched a joint campaign. They did that today on the eve of the premiere of the movie, demanding that President Obama actually pardon Edward Snowden, because if either Clinton or Trump become president during either one of their tenures, his chance for a pardon are nil to non-existent.
Mm-hmm. Well, what can I say, Laura? I think
we should all go see the movie.
Yes, we should.
So anyway, moving along, we've got a great show ahead. Today, we begin an extended conversation with investigative journalist Lisa Graves, executive director of the Center for Media and Democracy and former member of Move to Amend's national leadership team, about the corporate-funded agenda of the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, and the ongoing investigations to expose the connection between ALEC's model bills and their corporate schemes to the public. So let's get started.
Well, folks, you know, Chelsea Manning, the whistleblower imprisoned at Leavenworth, Kansas for releasing the Iraq War logs, has ended her hunger strike on Wednesday, September 14th, after the government agreed to provide necessary medical treatment to treat her gender dysphoria. Following the attempted suicide in July, Manning began the hunger strike on September 9th in an effort to motivate the government, which refused treatment for the gender dysphoria as recommended by her doctors in April 2016. Her jailers also refused to allow Manning to grow her hair to regulation length prescribed for family female prisoners, despite recommendations issued back in 2014. Manning still faces charges for the suicide attempt, and she still may not grow out her hair. Chase Strangio, a An attorney with the ACLU says the following. It is nonetheless troubling that the government continues to insist that they will enforce the male hair length standards against her and subject her to a disciplinary board over administrative charges related to her suicide attempt in July, which has precipitated by the government's refusal to adequately treat her for gender dysphoria. Given the recognition of Chelsea's healthcare needs, we hope that she is immediately permitted to grow her hair consistent with the standard for female military prisoners, and that all charges related to her suicide attempt and investigation that follows are followed or dropped.
Well, I hope the ACLU succeeds in those last two efforts the way they succeeded in the first one.
Yes.
And speaking of success, although I don't know whose success it is, corporations have increased their wealth vis-a-vis countries, according to new figures released by Global Justice Now in London. The campaign group found that 69 of the world's top economic entities are corporations rather than countries in 2015. They also discovered that the world's top 10 corporations, a list that includes Walmart, Shell, and Apple, have a combined revenue of more than the 180 poorest countries combined in the list, which include Ireland, Indonesia, Israel, Colombia, Greece, South Africa, Iraq, and Vietnam. The figures are worse than last year, when 63 of the top economic entities were corporations. When looking at the top 200 economic entities, the figures are even more extreme, with 153 of them being corporations. Global Justice Now released the figures in order to increase pressure on the British government ahead of a UN working group led by Ecuador, which, and let's tie that into Julian Assange, another whistleblower who's stuck in Ecuador, is stuck in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Right. The working group, which is led by Ecuador, is established to draw up a binding treaty to ensure transnational corporations abide by the full range of human rights responsibilities. Campaigners are calling for the treaty to be legally enforceable at a national and global level. Britain doesn't support the process and has repeatedly vetoed and opposed such proposals in the past. Nick Dearden, the director of Global Justice Now, said the vast wealth and power of corporations is at the heart of so many of the world's problems like inequality and climate change. The drive for short-term profits today seems to trump basic human rights for millions of people on the planet. These figures show the problem is getting worse. The UK government has facilitated this rise in corporate power through tax structures, trade deals, and even aid programs that help big business. Their wholehearted support for the US-EU trade deal, TTIP, is just the latest example of government help to big business. Disgracefully, it also routinely opposes the call of developing countries to hold corporations to account for their human rights impacts at the UN. That's why today we're joining campaigns from across the world to tell the British government to stop blocking this international demand for justice. Global Justice Now is a democratic social justice organization working as part of a global movement to challenge the powerful and create a more just and equal world, mobilizing people in the UK for change and acting in solidarity with those fighting injustice, particularly in the global south.
Laura, we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do. But...
And we have a lot to learn from the global south. So.
Yes, we do. But folks, with Labor Day behind us, the campaign cycle shifts into hyperdrive. Following the money is usually a pretty good predictor of what we can expect. And by the looks of it, there's no reason to expect anything more than the pay-for-play system that has governed elections for many decades. Over $1 billion has been spent so far in this election cycle. As of August 22nd, the amount raised so far by all candidates, including primaries, $992 million. Amount raised so far by super PACs supporting them, $502 million. Clinton is a leader in the money race. From PACs, she received $120,109,000 in direct donations, $315,353,000. My God. Trump has received $35,347,000 from PACs. And
those are hundred thousands.
Say it again.
It's they're 100,000.
Yeah, right. And 125,221,000 in independent donations. Johnson has received 530. I mean, that's a lot of money, but it seems funny. He has received $530,000 in PAC money and $2,953,000 in direct donations. Contrast that with Stein, who has taken no money from PACs and has raised $1.877 million. Look, that last number is sad but revealing. Were half Sanders supporters gone? Stein had positioned herself near Sanders, so one would expect her to benefit once Clinton clinched the nomination, especially after the abuse of party rules. Obviously, some Sanders supporters will vote Clinton, but what about the others and all their small dollar donations? Food for thought. Thanks to the Center for Responsive Politics for supplying these figures, you can take a deep dive into the money behind our elections at opensecrets.org.
Coming up next, we have a conversation with the Center for Media and Democracy's Executive Director, Lisa Graves, about the corporate-funded agenda of ALEC and the effort to expose the connection between its model bills and their corporate schemes to the public. We'll get the ball rolling after a quick public service announcement.
To learn more about corporate personhood, money as protected political speech, and how to get involved with Move to Amend, visit movetoamend.org. Don't forget to sign the petition and join over 400,000 people supporting the We the People Amendment at movetoamend.org/motion. You can also text the word sign to 707-656-4019.
Help raise awareness about the movement to amend the Constitution by hosting your own house party for democracy. Invite family, friends, and neighbors for a screening of our mini-documentary, Legalize Democracy. To find the film and learn how to get started with your house party, visit movetoamend.org/houseparties. That's one word, movetoamend.org/houseparties.
You're listening to Move to Amend Reports, where we bring you the voices from the movement to amend the Constitution and abolish corporate rule.
Every day, communities in the United States and around the world struggle with the harmful consequences of unfettered corporate rule, aided and abetted by a government beholden to wealthy interests over the needs of we the people. Through the corporate-funded American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, global corporations and state politicians vote behind closed doors to try to rewrite state laws that govern our rights and hold these institutions accountable. These so-called model bills reach into almost every area of American life and often directly benefit huge corporations. In Alec's own words, corporations have a voice and vote on specific changes to the law that are then proposed in your state. Do you? Today, we engage in an extended discussion about the ongoing investigation known as ALEC Exposed, where journalists and whistleblowers unveil ALEC's model bills and their corporate schemes to the public. Joining us is Lisa Graves, the Executive Director of the Center for Media and Democracy, CMD, a national watchdog group investigating and exposing the undue influence of corporations on public policy. Lisa was Deputy Assistant Attorney General at the U.S. Department of Justice in the Office of Legal Policy, Policy Development, and served as Chief Counsel for Nominations for the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee for Senator Patrick Leahy. She also worked as the Deputy Chief for the U.S. Court System in the Division for Lifetime Appointed Judges, as an adjunct law professor, and as the leading legislative strategist on privacy issues and national security surveillance. She has testified as an expert witness in both the Senate and the House, and her analysis has been quoted on every major news network in the country and in every major paper in the U.S., along with major international outlets. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Oh, Laura, thank you so much. It's nice to be on, and glad to be on with both of you.
Excellent, Lisa, excellent. Look, as I mentioned before, the work that you guys do is so important. I can tell you that we've used it both here at my own websites and at Daily Coasts. We really use your material. So, you know, we owe you a huge debt of gratitude to the Center for Media and Democracy for Exposing ALEC. I think it's important. So tell us what first drew your attention to ALEC and the processes you implemented to expose ALEC.
Well, thank you so much for those kind words. It really is a labor of love by me and my team on these issues. And in terms of the ALEC work, we've been doing this now for more than 5 years. This is actually the fifth year anniversary of the launch of ALEC Exposed. We launched in July of 2011, and that was after a whistleblower gave me all of the bills that had been secretly voted on by corporate lobbyists voting as equals with elected officials behind closed doors on so-called model bills to change our rights. And then those bills get introduced in our state houses and rammed into law and become binding in many instances on the rest of us without anyone realizing that they were pre-voted on by unelected corporate lobbyists and special interest groups. And so that project came about in part because after the 2010 midterm elections, there was a surge in power, basically, by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, in which it suddenly had domination in a number of state legislatures and had alums in governorships or sympathetic, people who are pro-ALEC in those governorships, like some we can talk about later on in this podcast. But we and others saw a number of really extreme bills coming out of those legislatures being rammed through, bills to change worker rights, bills to change the rights of Americans killed or injured, and the families of Americans killed or injured by corporate products or corporate practices. A professor in Wisconsin actually wrote a New York Times editorial or op-ed where he suggested that perhaps the source of some of this legislation was ALEC, and by ALEC we don't mean Alec Baldwin. And that led to a group of activists on Daily Coast who started really tracking ALEC, and they organized the very first ever protest of ALEC in April of 2011 in Cincinnati. And out of that protest came a whistleblower from within ALEC who provided all of those bills to try to get them shared with the public so the public could know what was going on. And there was an effort to propose that other groups publish those bills, and there was a lot of groups that just weren't willing to do it. But the person was referred to me as someone who would strongly consider it. And I looked at the bills, and I realized that every single one of these bills had already been published. They've been published in every state house in the country, but they just didn't have the ALEC name on them, so you couldn't connect the dots. My team and I worked hard and reviewed all the bills and annotated them and analyzed them, and we published them so that the world could see what was going on through ALEC, the depth and breadth and duration of its corporate agenda to really dramatically change the rights of ordinary Americans. This ALEC Exposed effort, although we are the research engine over these past 5 years that has really driven a number of these stories along with other allies and colleagues in the press, the reality is that this would never have happened but for literally a small group of people, as Margaret Mead says, who were determined to change the world and who stood up against ALEC in the very first protest in its nearly four-decade history of ALEC. And the result of their courageous action provoked someone else to engage in courageous action to come forward as a whistleblower. And that led to the public learning for the very first time about how ALEC really operated and how its bills were actually being approved by corporate lobbyists and how those bills actually have harmed countless Americans.
Well, I can tell you on a local issue how important that the work that you guys did was for our community. When we brought in Elizabeth Fagan from the Colorado School District into our district here, we used your material to convince many people who otherwise would not have been easily convinced. We're in a very conservative area, that what the school intended to do was to follow a path not based on local issues, but a path that was brought down from, a corporate path, if you will, using ALEC as the model. And we were able to go to your site, and I wrote a couple blogs for the local community here that actually showed that, in effect, exactly what you said there were these model bills implemented in Kansas, implemented other places, and already submitted in Texas as bills to attempt to change our local school board to behave, to have these different programs like the privatizations of schools by other names. So your work is important. And for those that are listening to this podcast, it is important that they note the importance of what you do, and they note that they do, because of the work you do, we have options, or we have the ability to look into options that otherwise would cost a whole lot of money to have people research and do. So thanks for that work.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm so glad it was useful. You know, that's one of the things we discovered when looking at the ALEC bills was how this cookie cutter agenda had been sold in state after state after state as a supposedly local solution to local problems, when in fact it was sort of a McBill operation by corporate lobbyists and corporate lawyers to have basically one-stop shopping for legislators at ALEC meetings to wine and dine and schmooze and booze them and have them go back to their state houses and push these bills as if they were their own ideas, as if they were their own innovations, as if they thought of them, as if they cared what local people thought, or as if it was informed at all by anyone who lived in their own district or who they supposedly represented, when in fact it was really a national corporate agenda designed to look more local by being pushed by these local legislators who are beholden to these corporations and to this agenda. And so, you know, we think it's stunning. A number of the ALEC bills are repugnant. I mean, they really are astonishing in what they aim for. For example, there are bills that say that legislatures can't put caps on interest rates, can't limit the use of these really usurious loan sharking rates, basically. Of course, the ordinary citizens aren't, you know, petitioning their legislators saying, hey, please make sure we get screwed by these loan sharks, by these corporate loan sharks on loans when we're in desperate financial circumstances. They're not actually calling for those measures. But you know who is? The loan shark business that has been a significant funder of ALEC. And that's just one of many such examples in which you have an agenda that I think is immoral in many ways, is at odds with the moral and best interests of the citizens, and not, in fact, even pushed and desired by the citizens, but that is sought eagerly by corporations that want to pad their bottom line, that want to make it easier for them to gouge the consumer, that want to make it harder for consumers to hold them accountable and can get their way through the willing assistance and ministrations of ALEC.
It is so important for us to put it in the terms that you just put it, which is amoral, because what happens is they try to cloak this into independence, freedom, and morality, and we have to dispel that. So that's absolutely correct.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things that was stunning to me when I looked at the ALEC bills and the materials and whistleblower was that there was a document called ALEC 101. And in that document, it was basically the PR document that ALEC prepared to try to sell itself and sell its services to corporations. And that bill said that the private sector and public sector, that's how it described this corporate and legislator alliance, that the private sector and public sector would get a, quote, equal voice and vote. And I was just shocked and stunned by that. The idea that these legislators would be so supine, would be so subservient, that they would dare to give unelected corporate lobbyists, including lobbyists from some of the biggest corporations in the world, as well as foreign corporations, an equal vote to themselves on these bills in these closed-door meetings without the press or public present, and then walk into the legislatures and push those bills without disclosing what had happened, that they had voted or they'd been voted on by these corporate lobbyists, was astonishing to me. To me, it's a subversion of core principles of our democracy in terms of how a bill is supposed to become a law. This isn't just lobbying or someone saying, you know, to a lawmaker, hey, please introduce this bill. You know, and there certainly are problems with excessive influence on lobbying. This is an organization that has claimed to the IRS, ALEC has claimed the IRS repeatedly, that it engages in zero lobbying. Zero was the number reported to the IRS. And yet it is facilitating the lobbying of some of the biggest corporations on the planet. And quite frankly, this idea, the notion that unelected corporations, that corporate entities should have an equal voice and vote with our elected officials is repugnant to the notion of a democracy, which is government of the people, by the people, for the people, not of the corporations, by the corporations, for the corporations, and certainly not closed-door secret voting on those bills by corporations before they're introduced in our state houses to become the laws that govern us. It is antithetical to the notion of a democracy, and quite frankly, anyone of any political party or no political party, whether you're Republican or Green or Libertarian or Democratic or any other party, should think that this sort of behavior is acceptable, should be normal in our democracy, or that legislators who go along with it are somehow doing the normal and acceptable thing.
Well, it's kind of interesting that you brought up voting and, of course, legislators and the fact that we're in the middle of a huge election. This presidential election year has been a bigger than usual distraction from the actual legislation being passed in state legislatures. While we the people are arguing over two of the most disliked presidential candidates in this nation's history, Alec has been hard at work on their corporate agenda. Just exactly what have they been up to this year?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, CMD does not take a position on electoral races, but we certainly do monitor the policies and keep an eye on what policy measures are being pushed by various front groups like ALEC. And what we've seen in ALEC is a continuation of its agenda to make it harder to address the climate changes that are underway. ALEC has a multi-pronged effort to try to stop the implementation of the Clean Power Plan. The Clean Power Plan is an initiative of the Obama administration that certainly does not go far enough in dealing with the crises that lay ahead for us in terms of the climate changes that are underway, but it takes steps in the right direction. And those modest steps are being thwarted by ALEC and by the officials that are part of ALEC and by other officials that ALEC has reached out to in the states, including attorneys general, Republican attorneys general in states across the country, to try to do everything to thwart that law, to do it by litigation, to do it by legislation, to try to do it by regulation. And, you know, why is that? Oh, it's because ALEC is funded by some of the biggest coal and oil companies in the world, companies like Koch Industries, companies like Exxon, companies like Peabody Coal, one of the biggest privately held coal companies in the world. So what you have is a real pay-to-play operation in which these politicians are more than willing to do the bidding of these corporations and try to advance their wish list in our legislatures and in our court system. And to do so in secret while claiming this is just some sort of debating society exchange among legislators about so-called best practices. In fact, this summer, ALEC's spokes guy had the audacity to claim that ALEC is just like a model UN club or a boys and girls club because nothing it does is binding. I mean, it's shocking, right? I mean,
this list of legislation that's been passed. I mean, it's actual law, and to say that it's not binding is kind of... Egberto was talking about immoral and the word immoral, and then you went on to use words like repugnant and anti-democratic. I don't think we've exactly explored the entire depth of English language to describe just how horrible this organization, its horrible impact on our culture and our communities. It's really devastating. What's coming in what's going to come in 17?
Well, you know, they are continuing to push their agenda to privatize schools, to, you know, get schools out of the hands of the public, out of truly public institutions with truly public accountability, including the accountability to local school boards, into private charters that include some of these so-called virtual schools or for-profit companies like K-12 that are, you know, just raking in millions and millions of our tax dollars while advertising to us and having pretty shoddy results, quite frankly, in when the kids are tested. As I suppose you might imagine, if you could think of teenagers or preteens, learning entirely from the computer without distraction. I don't know many of them among my nieces and nephews who would thrive in that environment without having the ordinary environment of a real school. But anyway, ALEC is continuing to push its agenda to privatize our public school system. This is a long-standing part of the Koch agenda and the Friedman agenda to, you know, contest anything that's public, to oppose the very idea of having public schools, and to do so through a variety of measures to weaken or defund public education, as well as to attack teachers and make it harder for teachers to organize, to be advocates for students, to, you know, advocate for better classroom sizes and things like that. So ALEC has a longstanding has had a longstanding practice of targeting teachers and targeting workers who are unionized, particularly public sector unions, but also private sector unions. It's hostile to those rights in the extreme. It has a longstanding set of those proposals. It's continuing to push measures to change the rules for budgets for states and for the federal government. And in fact, it's calling not for a constitutional amendment per se, but for a constitutional convention on balanced budget measures. And there are a number of groups that are within ALEC that are pushing for a convention. And they basically have constructed a convention process in which they pre-cook the results. And so their convention process basically, in some of the proposals, would set in time the current Republican governors of the states as delegates, along with the Republican leaders of these legislatures as delegates, so that they basically can pre-count the votes for what would happen at such a convention and in terms of getting what they want. And it's not just a balanced budget that they want. They're clearly reaching out to gun groups and others who are pushing their own agenda, trying to change our constitutional rights in many ways. And I say that in part because obviously I know that that Move to Amend and its many hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of supporters and allies in the United States who are pushing for a constitutional amendment on Citizens United are hard at work at trying to make our Constitution more responsive, more democratic, to restore or create a democracy that really is thriving and not under this sort of corporate control. But in the meantime, the right wing, through ALEC and through various appendages, has a really hardcore attack going on to sort of bypass that process and have a convention in which they basically have pre-cooked the delegates and the delegate selection process to get the result they want to the detriment of many, if not all Americans, except for the 0.00001%. Because even if they got the balanced budget amendment that they're clamoring for, it would just utterly destroy the U.S. economy. It would undermine the funding of basically all things public other than basically defense. And it would have a truly devastating effect on America being a modern 21st century democracy.
No, of course, you know, that is the reason why they want people less educated, because less educated people aren't going to be forward thinking, as mentioned. So, I mean, that is the reasons why they're really not concerned about making sure educational system is the way it is supposed to be. But we'll continue this conversation after a quick public service announcement.
Does your elected representative support amending the Constitution to end corporate constitutional rights and get money out of politics? You can help us find out by joining Move to Amend's Pledge to Amend campaign. Help persuade local, state, and federal legislators to pledge support for our We the People amendment. Recruit co-sponsors for this amendment in the U.S. House and Senate. For more information, visit movetoamend.org/pledge-amend. That's movetoamend.org/pledge-amend.
Move to Amend's We the People Amendment is the only proposed amendment in Congress that addresses both Supreme Court-created doctrines, corporate personhood, and money as speech, the very foundations of corporate rule. Passing the We the People Amendment is the necessary first step in transforming our democracy to one that truly represents the 99%. Go to movetoamend.org/amendment. Read it and take action today.
You're listening to Move to Amend Reports, where we connect the dots between the current issues of our time and the nature of corporate rule. We're talking with the executive director of the Center for Media and Democracy, Lisa Graves, about their investigations into the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, and what's on the corporate agenda for 2016 and beyond. Well, let's talk about some of the big campaign issues and the relationships to ALEC. And I'll just tick some off and you can jump in whenever you want. probably at the top of the list is income inequality, followed very, very closely by catastrophic climate change, including...
Wait, so we should stop. Should we do them one at a time?
All right.
Do you want to do one at a time, Laura?
Yeah, okay.
So income inequality, it's interesting because the Kochs have tried to rebrand themselves as supposedly the saviors of the poor, which is, you know, the height of ridiculousness, given the way their policies would detrimentally impact people, you know, from most of the classes, economic classes in this country. You know, the Koch worldview is this sort of extreme form of capitalism in which, you know, really the government does nothing besides provide police to defend property. The government is not engaged in programs to provide for public goods like public education, or to improve on those public goods like public education. And ALEC has pushed a number of measures that the Kochs have long wanted, including this sort of balanced budget amendment approach, but also dramatic changes in tax policy to try to eliminate corporate taxation, to try to eliminate what they call the death tax, but the estate taxes on wealth that have affect really only people who have assets in excess of several million dollars, including billions of dollars. And without estate taxes in place, it's much easier for a really rigid hierarchical class system to be sustained over, you know, many lifetimes, many generations. But of course, they want to eliminate the estate tax. They want to eliminate the capital gains tax. They don't believe in a minimum wage. ALEC has sought to repeal the minimum wage as well as oppose any efforts to increase the minimum wage. The Kochs have a similar hostility to those wage policies that set a floor for the American people. They prefer free market fundamentalism in which corporations can basically drive wages down as low as humanly possible, as low as people will tolerate. ALEC has pushed for basically every bad trade deal that has come up in the past several decades. Those trade deals have had a devastating impact in many instances on the American economy in terms of jobs here, and have, you know, hollowed out some of our big industrial cities. And so, you know, ALEC wants to talk about how it's, you know, somehow pushing forward policies that help our economy thrive when, you know, it's voodoo economics is the type of economic policy that has harmed our states and harmed states like Kansas, where Brownback is governor and has tried to implement the ALEC agenda, states like Wisconsin, where Scott Walker has tried to implement the ALEC agenda, and other states trying to put forward an economic agenda that they claim will produce free market results for the poor and working class, which actually have the result of making it much harder for ordinary Americans, the vast majority of Americans, while giving huge tax giveaways to the richest few.
Okay, you mentioned trade deals, so I imagine another issue was on my list. The TPP is among them. They support the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Well, they've been, you know, it's interesting because they've had sessions or, you know, discussions about it. Obviously, there's some controversy going on, some substantial controversy, certainly on the left and in some sectors on the right over that trade policy. But ALEC has not issued any resolution against the passage of the TPP. If anything changes before your podcast on that front, I'll get back to you. But basically, you know, ALEC is in the business of doing the bidding of the corporations that want those international trade policies, which don't just impact jobs in the United States or the, you know, the rules for our agriculture and our products and the health and safety of our products and even labeling of products and where they're made. You know, those trade policies also have had the impact of basically getting away from ordinary jury rights and rights to trial here in the U.S. and trying to put some of these disputes in the hands of foreign or, you know, corporate selected arbiters who are not part of our judicial system. And so, you know, I have great concerns and grave concerns about the TPP as well as some of the other trade policies. ALEC has, for the most part, been a proponent of every single one of them.
You mentioned catastrophic climate change, their climate denying. Can you give us some more specifics on that?
Sure. So beyond their efforts to stop the implementation of the Clean Power Plan, ALEC has spent over two decades basically propagandizing against the reality of climate change to thousands of state legislators. It has claimed that climate change might not be happening, could be happening. If it is happening, it's good for you. It's put forward people who have claimed that increased CO2 is, quote, good for you. And, you know, to try to emulate, they've also put forth people who claim that it's not happening, that there's actually cooling going on. They've put forth people who have attacked climate scientists, you know, really ruthlessly. So basically, ALEC, and we have a whole site called alecclimatechangedenial.org, which captures some of these quotes, because ALEC has wanted to basically lie to the press and claim that it, quote, has no position on climate change and isn't a denial organization, when we have literally a mountain of evidence showing how ALEC has advanced the denial agenda and has advanced denialist propaganda.
Now, there's a real life. We have a pretty obvious one. There's a connection here, is there not? Is not Exxon a member of ALEC? And of course, Exxon just made the news months ago for knowing about global warming and covering it up. And now there's this investigation going on with state's attorneys general and things.
That's right. That's right. In fact, we submitted evidence after the New York Attorney General announced his investigation. And we also submitted evidence to the California Attorney General about Exxon's role in funding ALEC and ALEC's climate change denial operations. And we have some more evidence that we have obtained. But the key evidence, as you point out, is the historical evidence that I believe was secured through archive research by researchers with the SMOG, the DSMOG blog. And that research showed that Exxon's own scientists knew that this massive burning of carbon was having an impact, an adverse impact on our climate decades ago, and then sought to pursue basically the tobacco playbook on sowing seeds of confusion or denial, sowing disinformation to try to tell people that there was not a consensus, or it was controversial, or was unproven, or what have you. And we have submitted evidence to two of the state attorneys general about those matters. And I think, you know, on this moral question, what an incredibly immoral act. Now, I say that not actually expecting necessarily a corporation that has no conscience, doesn't breathe, doesn't drink water, doesn't, have to have the same concerns as ordinary human beings, that as if a corporation has a conscience. But in fact, corporations have leaders, CEOs and board members and owners. Those CEOs have gone along with this this effort to sow doubt. In fact, there's a fantastic film called The Merchants of Doubt that documents the role of these corporations in sowing this doubt in the minds of the American people, and a minority, but it's still a significant minority of the American people, about these issues. And quite frankly, Exxon has used ALEC, and ALEC has been happy to be used by Exxon to advance that sort of agenda. And beyond that, ALEC has actually also sought to attack solar energy, has attacked tax benefits for people who install solar panels on their house. It has been involved in efforts to make it harder to have state commitments on pollution, in particular on carbon and on climate affecting gases. And that's the RPS standards, basically. So ALEC has sought to take those down. Those are regional agreements that states entered into to try to reduce the impact on climate change, and to do so voluntarily in the face of, you know, federal inaction or inadequate action on those fronts. And so ALEC is a multi-pronged climate denial, climate pollution defender machine, basically.
Tune in next week for the conclusion of our extended conversation about ALEC and the investigations into its corporate-funded agenda with the Center for Media and Democracy's Lisa Graves. So, folks, join us.
And that's it for this edition of Move to Amend Reports. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.
Move to Amend Reports was created and brought to you by Move to Amend.
produced by national team members Keon Bliss, Laura Bonham, Egberto Willis, and Caitlin Saposi Belknap, with the assistance of Renee Babcock, and with contributions from Move to Amend staff and affiliates. Opening theme entitled Move to Amend, performed by Shimako Noble and produced by Soul Circuitry.